Hello there and welcome to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters right here on ESPN. I'm Ariel Helwani. It is Wednesday, August 28th, 2019. It is great to be back here with you for another episode of the program. One of my favorite things that I do each and every week. And of course, as always, in the world of mixed martial arts, there is a lot going on. We're coming off a UFC bye week, but Bellator had a phenomenal show in Bridgeport, Connecticut. 14 fights, 14 finishes. And this weekend, it's all about the UFC's return to China. Their sixth event in China. They're going to Shenzhen for the first time. And the main event is a historic one. It is Jessica Andrade defending her women's strawweight title against the Chinese-born Zhang Weili. There has never been a Chinese-born champion in UFC history. Zhang Weili, who has won 19 fights in a row, she lost her pro debut, has proceeded to win 19 straight after that, is the challenger, and this could open up so many doors for the UFC. They just opened up that PI, the Performance Institute in Shanghai, but if you can get a Chinese-born champion, wow, we're talking big business. So a lot at stake there. The fight, the main card is at 6 a.m. Eastern time, so the fight will probably happen at around 8 a.m., 8:30, depending on how quickly the card goes. But this is big business. This is big stakes for the UFC and a lot of pressure on Zhang Weili. They are trying to make her into the face of Chinese MMA. Can she get it done? We'll talk more about that card a little later on in the program. We'll also end things with New York Rick. Talk to him about some news and notes. Darren Till will be making his middleweight debut. He has decided to move up. We'll talk to him about that and some other stuff. We'll talk to Mark Raimondi primarily about the card in China this weekend. But I'm very excited to talk to our first guest because, as you may have heard last week, Bellator announced that James Haskell, former rugby player, former member of the English national team, has decided to move over to mixed martial arts. He's in his mid-30s. He's a big MMA fan, has done some work for BT Sport. They signed him with no prior MMA experience. He has not had any amateur fights, any pro fights. Had a press conference earlier today to formally introduce him to the media and to the fans. And so James Haskell, who's very well known in Europe, and I will admit did not know a lot about him, but when I tweeted about him last week, I got a ton of response. And so I thought it would be interesting to talk a little more about James's foray into the world of mixed martial arts, and also about this movement as of late where we've seen a lot of rugby players find success in mixed martial arts. Alex Volkanovski, Tai Tuivasa, to name a couple. And so with that in mind, I reached out to Alex Corbacero, who's a rugby analyst for NBC Sports, played with James Haskell in England, longtime rugby player, had a phenomenal career, now moving over to the TV side of things. He as well has a connection to the world of mixed martial arts, had trained at American Top Team and is friends with a lot of fighters, active on social media. I thought he'd be great to provide some insight into the move that James Haskell is making and who James Haskell is. And so let's say hello now to Alex, who joins us via the phone. Alex, how are you?
Ariel, great to be here. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for doing this. I know you're a longtime fan of the sport, in addition to your love of rugby. And so, like I said, I thought it would be interesting to get your insight into this because they had the press conference earlier today. And so let's start with this. If I ask you, who is James Haskell? Could you tell us? Because I know I'm maybe not saying the lingo the right way. There's rugby union and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I will admit I'm an ignorant Canadian. I don't know about this stuff as well as others.
Sorry.
Can you tell me, who is James Haskell?
Yeah, well, James Haskell, I'll try and keep it brief because obviously he's had a very outstanding, say, 15-year career in top-flight rugby. But he is a man who, since, I think, 20 years old, has played at the highest level of the sport. He is a bit of, like, he calls himself a Marmite character, which is sort of love him or hate him. He's a big personality, very outspoken, very sarcastic and funny, but really has had a very successful career where he's played internationally, he's traveled the world. He's always kind of beat to his own drum and sort of defied the norm of, say, the stereotypical mold of what a rugby player should be. And he is a phenomenal athlete. He's someone who's very, very strong, very, very sort of cardiovascular fit, very in physical great shape, and also a very intelligent player as well. He kind of has the full balance. He recently retired at the end of this season that just finished in May due to a toe injury. But it also, I think, for the people listening, just because you're retiring from rugby because of injury doesn't really mean that you're not able to perform anymore. It's more the constraints of the game of rugby season. You are in training camp, say, double the season of what an NFL player is. So you basically have about 4 or 5 weeks off the year. The rest of that time you're running, doing contact training, and you're kind of in a team. You have to conform to the team's schedule. And I feel like he, just at 34, a bit like myself, I reached that point at 27, just wasn't in a position to keep up with the schedule and the demands of a team sport.
How big of a deal is this over in England? How big of a news story is it that he's making the move to mixed martial arts?
It's a big deal. It's a big deal. I think as far as rugby goes, he's one of the most sort of recognizable personalities. More, a lot so, you actually, to maybe you guys be surprised for how he conducts himself off the field than on. There's a lot of players in his elite bracket that probably don't get any recognition, where he, because of his personality, because of his outgoingness, his willing to put himself in uncomfortable positions and willing to be in front of the spotlight, has built himself a very successful brand. And you could argue one of the biggest brands of any rugby player in the world. And this is big news. You know, he's been a fan of the sport. He's done stuff with BT Sport, features with the UFC. He's done stuff with Bama as well as a personality hosting. He's kind of always had a little bit of a feel around the sport. And this is really the first, I think, UK have experienced of a big athlete like this trying to cross over that I can really think of. I know there's been a lot more in the US, but other than that, you know, I can't think of anyone else right now to compare it to.
And so when you talk about his personality off the field, like, is he a wild child? Is he controversial? Is he known for doing things that got him in trouble?
He's hilarious. Well, I find him hilarious. Some people can find him offensive. He's sort of a blend of, like, stand-up comedy meets that, like, typical, very posh, aristocratic English sense of humor. And he is kind of a unique blend to himself, but it's been his ability, you know, to do TV shows, to try and, you know, his personality shines through with his comedy, his ability to, you know, he's done topless magazine spreads, he's done gay magazine spreads, he's always been outspoken on issues, he's never really conformed to this sort of, archaic mold of that you're a rugby player and you have to conduct yourself a certain way. He's always kind of been outside of the box as such, and this kind of suits his wheelhouse of how he sort of has conducted himself through his career.
I believe 77 caps for England. Would it be fair to say he's one of the best English rugby players of all time? Or is that a stretch?
In his position, he's definitely up there in an elite bracket. I think rugby is very positional, even though it is a free-flowing game. So it's a bit like you trying to compare maybe Tom Brady and a running back or something that you couldn't quite compare their stats, but in his sort of position, he's 77 caps for your country for the career span that he was able to have. He's definitely in a very, very elite club in England and world rugby.
Bellator these days, I don't know if you know this, they're making a really big push in the UK with their TV deal with Sky Sports and just opening up this Bellator European series, if you will. Getting Haskell to sign, getting him there, like, do you feel like we are starting, I'm starting to hear people say, like, oh, they're getting a leg up on the UFC. They're starting to get more attention than the UFC these days. Will this help put them over? Do you feel like this is that big of a deal where at some point, because I was looking at some of the press conferences and, you know, they were asking, I believe the head coach is Eddie Jones, right? They were asking him about Bellator. They were just talking about Bellator like it was just a household name. Is it possible that he can help make Bellator more popular in England than the UFC is?
100%, he's going to bring them into more of the spotlight and bring more fan recognition to Bellator, just because he is going to bring a large audience with him. He's going to have a lot of people that want to see him succeed, but because of his character, he's also going to have a lot of people that probably want to see him fail. So he's going to kind of draw from both sides of the fan base or people that know him. And I do think he is going to bring much more recognition to the sport. I think you already saw a bit. Was it with Bama and Bellator with the guy from Geordie Shore and the eyeballs that draw in the UK? And I feel like this will follow in that mold. I think he's an elite caliber athlete, a big name. I know personally from speaking to him, he's taking this very, very seriously and isn't trying to do it as some sort of circus show or sideshow or, you know, like scrub opportunity. He's taking this with his sort of athlete mentality into this venture as such. And I do think that that is going to help grow. I think the UFC is still on a higher platform just because of its worldwide recognition and its sort of caliber as the elite level opposition in the world going head to head. But there's massive room for Bellator to grow here. I know there's a little distaste in the UK with some people being annoyed that Bellator is on, at UFC pay-per-views now have to pay as well as BT Sport, where Bellator have just secured on Sky Sports, which is a great platform for them, gives them really mainstream recognition. I think all of this combined is just going to push their stock up in Europe. I just don't know quite if they're going to sort of dethrone the UFC.
I heard him say that initially when Bellator called him, he thought that they were just going to offer him like a commentating gig. And now, of course, he signs a deal to fight with them. So when you spoke to him, I haven't talked to him yet. I'm hoping to do so because I'm curious about this story. When you spoke to him, did you get the sense that this was something that he wanted to do or they convinced him to do it?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think he was always going to train and do a lot of the training because that's kind of how I fell into mixed martial arts is post-rugby when you played your whole life, 10-plus years of a way, and then you leave a team sport, it's very hard to fill that void where martial arts is a great venture. It's kind of a blend of an individual and team sport in one that you can tailor around your own schedule. So I think he was always gravitating to the training and was open to opportunities, probably more so in the media. But when this really fruitioned, I think, and the fact that there's a paycheck and an opposition for a platform, I know he's going to document his story. I know he's looking for sponsors and looking to build sort of another sort of area of his brand. I think all of that was enough to get his sort of athlete juices going that, you know, very few rugby players play rugby after they're done. One, because they've been paid to do it for most of their adult life now. So kind of going through that for no paycheck isn't the same thing. My understanding, and there's a worthwhile paycheck in that, that he's willing to give his full athlete commitment to this now and isn't under as too many false illusions of how hard it's going to be, really. As someone who's trained for almost 2 years now, it's a deep, deep ocean that he's getting into, and he's got to navigate it very, very cleverly, and he's got to make sure he starts, you know, with the right opponents at the beginning.
No secret that rugby players are very, very tough. Some of the toughest athletes on the planet, and that includes MMA fighters. Way tougher, in my opinion, than NFL players, but, you know, that's a different argument for a different day. Lately, we've seen some guys who have had careers, maybe not as decorated as a James Haskell, but they've had success in mixed martial arts. I mentioned earlier Alex Volkanovski, Tai Tuivasa. Yep. Those are two that come to mind. Do you think that James's move now, because of his high-profile stature, that we're going to start to see more rugby players towards the end of their career make the transition over to mixed martial arts?
I think we'll see more dabble. I think one of the things that I've noticed in rugby, which has been a growing theme, and this is part of the reason why James probably feels a bit more comfortable, there's been a big move in rugby in the last, say, 4 or 5 years to include a lot more grappling and technique of wrestling, jiu-jitsu, into the way they apply the contact areas, the body control areas of the sport. And I think that sort of opened guys' mind up to a little bit of martial arts and what it takes. And I do think James is going to be a trailblazer that I'm sure there'll be a few that follow, especially if he's able to be in somewhat, it's hard to know what your metrics of success are in this sort of venture, but if he's able to achieve some sort of success, I do think he's going to open the door for many more guys to do it. I think rugby, as well as being tough, it has a lot of similarities with the MMA that, say, some other sports like football don't have. I think it's constant decision-making. The fact that it's open-flow play, the ball's in play for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes at a time. You have to be moving, making decisions. It's physical, the conditioning, all those things sort of move itself to suit you when you're actually out there, that you're a little bit more up to speed with that. Your brain is used to making decisions under fatigue. It's used to analyzing and not sticking to, say, a set drill or a game plan and combating whatever's thrown at you in the moment. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, rugby does transfer very well to MMA. But at the same time, back to your, say, question, I believe he's opening doors for more, definitely.
And you know exactly what you're talking about because you had a great rugby career, but also you do train. And like I said, I believe you train at American Top Team in South Florida.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, I'm about 2 years in. I was living in Florida, so I trained the American Top Team for a year and a half or so. Good friends, a lot of fighters. Good friend with your good friend, King Mo.
The man.
The man. And I really enjoy it. I have thought at times about possibly fighting, whether it's worth it or not. But at the same time, knowing how big of a commitment is and being fortunate enough to have the ventures and the avenues I have in life after rugby, haven't quite crossed that threshold. But I've sparred. I roll weekly. I box. I don't kickbox as much as I used to. But at the same time, it's a tough ask. I think James is going to, like, when I spoke to him, he's not putting any set date on when he's going to fight. And I think that's smart. Similar to CM Punk or whatever, when they announced he was coming and then they didn't commit to a date for a long time. You saw why when you finally see him out there. It is such a hard, there's so many aspects of the sport to learn. It's such a tough environment. One mistake can cost you and make you look foolish out there and be a highlight reel forever, especially at heavyweight where all it takes is one shot. But I do think for James, heavyweight is a good opportunity. I don't think these ventures are going to work for guys in some of the smaller weight classes, because I think the skill level and the talent depth is a lot higher, where heavyweight, there's a lot more opportunity. There's not as many big athletic guys with good cardio that transfer into that division as much as you get sort of depth-wise in the other divisions.
I was at UFC 241 in Anaheim a couple of weeks ago. It was a great card. And at one
so
point.
So was I.
Well, I'm getting to that. I'm setting it up here. One point, we're watching the action, and all of a sudden, I start to hear everyone booing. I start to hear the entire crowd boo. And lo and behold, there's Colby Covington, hat, belt, and all, walking into the arena. And of course, he draws the ire. And it was that moment where I realized, all right, Colby is finally over. Like, it is working. Whatever he is doing is
100%.
Working.
100%. When they're going, Colby sucks as he
yes.
walks in, like, that is heel heat. Like, if they, he's not even on the big screen.
It's amazing. But true or false, my friend, you were there with him. You were right by his side. Were you his bodyguard that night?
Nah, I was his friend. But I, obviously, me and Colby have been friends for a long time at America Top Team, like I am with Mo and other guys. We actually did some pro wrestling together for Impact Wrestling, and that's kind of where we bonded, hanging out up in Canada doing some of the Impact shows. But I live in San Diego now, so it wasn't a big journey. It was nice to catch up, but at the same time, he's my friend. Like, he's kind of going in the lion's den there on his own. Obviously, I wasn't just gonna, if something happened, stand there and let him get beat up, but I wouldn't say bodyguard, just more what's the word, like, support act.
Well, I feel like the bigger he gets, the more hatred he is going to receive. The
vitriol.
I feel like he needs to have you there by his side every time. No one's going to mess with him with you by his side.
Well, you never know, no one, but I think it's definitely a deterrent. In some
yes.
But, yes. It really opened my eyes to how much volatility there is against him. Because he's still kind of the guy that I've known since the beginning, especially in closed doors as such. But at the same time, he's really committed to trying to make this run something special. He's built this persona. It is very much a divisive issue. He has his hardcore supporters and he has people that can't stand him. And I think that's the recipe to sell tickets, to make money in this sport. And I hope more people see what it is. But at the same time, the more people that have that response to him, I just feel happy for him that the more money hopefully he's going to make down the line. And I know how hard he's worked and I know what all these fighters commit and what they risk out there. So the fact that they can, instead of just commit to a normal fight, sell a big, make a big bunch of money doing something like this, I'm just happy to see it.
By the way, what drew you to start training in MMA and becoming such a big fan? Like, I see, I know on Twitter and stuff, you're talking about it all the time. What drew you to the sport? How long have you been a fan for?
Oh, I've been a fan a long time. Probably, like, the thing that really awoke me to it, like, started to follow it properly is when Brock crossed over. I think I started to fight. That's like the wrestling, because I've been a pro wrestling fan as a kid.
I think
that's where I started to sort of get into the sport more. And then since then, I've been, I would say, I'm in that diehard fan crowd since then. And it was actually, I met King Mo at WrestleMania. Through friends, I was in like the VIP section and he was there because something to do. Dolberg had hooked him up because they'd done something together. And I was a big fan, just went up and said hi. And I said I've always wanted to start training there. I'd done a little bit of jiu-jitsu and stuff when I played rugby, but not much. And he welcomed me down to ATT, hooked me up with some of the trainers. I worked with his boxing coach for a long time and then trained with him and got involved in some of the pro classes after a while. And that's kind of where it all started, was with King Mo.
That's amazing. Yeah, I know you're a huge fan. By the way, I want to give a shout out to John Gooden for telling me that you'd be perfect to learn more about James Haskell. And you have been perfect. This has been great. But and by the way, Volkanovski, again, I'm a total noob. I know nothing about rugby. I'm almost ashamed at how little I know. Was he big in his day, or was he more of like a club guy?
More of a club guy.
Okay.
This is why I think James has a chance. Because obviously he's older, he's near the end of his life, but he has been an elite caliber athlete in a sport that has rapidly evolved over the sort of the 15 years. He was at the top of it. And that sort of, you know, mental approach as well as his physical gifts gives me sort of hope and spirit that he's going to take as well as he can to this.
Any chance he does well, you see him doing well and say, all right, I'm going to give this a go as well?
Only if there was a load of money. possibly, but probably not.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been great, Alex. I really appreciate it. I know you have to run, so I'll let you go. But thank you so much for the insight. And your work as an analyst, I've been watching some of your clips and just trying to learn more about what you're doing as well. I know the World Cup is coming up next month as well.
Yeah.
You do great work, and you're a great ambassador for our sport now, trying to bring it to the mainstream. So I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words. Big fan, and it means a lot coming for you. A pleasure to have me on. Happy to catch up again, hopefully, as James' journey progresses.
Thanks so much. All the best to you.
All the best. Take care.
All right. Well, that was fascinating stuff from Alex. I enjoyed that very much and very knowledgeable about all things mixed martial arts. Painted the picture of who James Haskell is and what he's trying to do here. And I'm looking forward to talking to James in the coming weeks as well. Wish him the best. Now, let us turn our attention to New York Rick. In fact, before I get to New York Rick, let me first tell you about our good friends over at Cheap Heat. This is like the 10th time this week that I plug them. Our guy Troy over there just loves the Cheap Heat plugs. Anyway, this one's worthy because we're getting an early present from my pal, Peter Rosenberg. You know him. He's the man. He's the man who wears many hats. Episodes of Cheap Heat, as you probably know, normally come out on Fridays, but Peter just couldn't contain his excitement with King of the Ring going down and AEW, and so he is releasing a new episode later today. That's right, I said later today. Oh yeah, and I'm told Peter and Statty Hart give a review of Popeye's chicken sandwiches. Wow. If you're not downloading that episode right away after hearing that, I don't know what's wrong with you. Find the latest episode of Cheap Heat wherever you get your podcast, and I hope they have a lengthy breakdown of my interview with Bret Hart earlier this week. New York Rick, are you there?
I'm here.
If I'm allowed to break down the fourth wall, New York Rick wasn't supposed to join us right now, but we had to change things, and we don't do this live. We do it sort of live to tape. Right now, Mark Raimondi was supposed to join us, and I want to wish Mark a happy birthday, but he is not joining us because he is out whale watching with his significant other, who I'm a big fan of, but he canceled on me last minute because he's whale watching. How do we feel about this? Because I'm not quite sure how I feel about it.
Now, did he give advance notice of the whale watching? Because this is not something you do spur of the moment, right? Nobody just goes and says, let's go whale watching, as a spur of the moment thing, and then
thank you, Troy.
Does it.
Thank you. Did you hear that from Troy?
His wife surprised him with tickets.
I think it's his girlfriend, so let's not get crazy, but yet surprised him. Troy called him up to get him cued, and he said, I'm sorry, I can't make it. I'm out whale watching. Now, worth noting, Mark, one of the more reliable people in the history of MMA media, in this particular case, am I allowed to be perturbed or
no?
Because it's his birthday and it was a present and all that stuff, am I being too harsh?
But no text, no call.
No text, no call.
No hello, can't make it.
Nothing.
You know, I'm
a text a text after Troy spoke to him and informed me of the news.
I'm gonna have to bury Mark here.
Thank
unacceptable
you.
Behavior.
Okay. Appreciate
I
it.
I expect him to be reprimanded, in fact.
You think I should ban him like the old days?
I don't know if you ban him because he is a valuable resource. I almost feel like that'd be cutting off your nose despite your face.
Yeah.
But I think some kind of reprimand is in order, and I'm not sure what it is yet, but maybe we can brainstorm on it.
Okay. I like that. By the way, also wanted to note, in the news this week, Andrew Luck, you know, he retired suddenly. Am I crazy, or does Troy, the producer, sound exactly like Andrew Luck?
I'm going to say I definitely hear what
something.
You're saying.
You are the second person to say that this week.
See that? See that? Sounds exactly like him.
He has definitely a similar tone to Andrew Luck, but not quite as like there's like a gargly sound that Andrew Luck makes that Troy is much more clear. He's much more clear when he's speaking, but the tone, the pitch is on point. It's a good spot by you for sure.
Thank you. I call him these days Tight Ship Troy because he's trying to make the podcast 45 minutes long. It went from an hour to 55. This week he's trying to get me to do 45. I think it's ridiculous, but
it sounds like we're spending the time the right way so far.
Yes, exactly. Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, let's talk about a few things, and we were going to have so I'm switching things around in my mind, but you're very able to talk about this topic as well. I have to admit, and I'll offer a sort of mea culpa, if you will. When they first announced Zhang Wei Li against Jessica Andrade, I was like, oh, come on, really? Like, you're going to China. It seems like a bit of a stretch. But I take a step back, and you look at her resume, Zhang Wei Li, that is. 19 in a row, she lost her debut. She's won 3 straight in the UFC. She's beaten tough opponents like Jessica Aguilar and Tisha Torres. And I see the way she looks this week. Like, she is ripped. I don't know if you've seen the photos of her. Like, she is completely jacked, ready to go. This might be one of the greatest strokes of genius, that the UFC has ever pulled off, to have a Chinese-born fighter fighting in China for a UFC title and one who could very well win. Like, it's not a token, you know, opportunity, if you will. I have to say my level of excitement for this fight is actually way, way higher than it was when the fight was announced back in April or so. I'm really excited about this. And Chael, I just did the show with Chael, is predicting that she's going to win. I don't know if I'll go that far, but I think that this could be one of the more monumental moments in the history of the sport if she does, in fact, pull off the victory. Am I crazy here?
You're not crazy. What I think is interesting about Zhang Wei Li is that she is clearly legit. She stepped into the UFC and proved that those wins that she had before this were legitimate and that she is one of the top contenders. Now, I believe she's number 6 based on the UFC ranking, and I believe the biggest upset in terms of ranking, meaning the person who was ranked lowest at the time of their upset, was Holly Holm at number 7 over Ronda Rousey. So if we were talking about, from a rankings perspective, how big an upset this would be, it would be a huge upset, especially because of Jessica Andrade's pound-for-pound presence. But what I think works in Zhang Wei Li's favor in this case is the fact that we know she's legit, but we don't know how legit. We haven't seen her against all of the top competition at strawweight, and there's quite a bit of it. But we have seen her look flawless in the competitions that she has faced. So we are at least baseline level sure that she is a legitimate contender. She is a legitimate title challenger, but we don't know kind of where she falls. And I think that that makes the fight intriguing. We essentially know how good Jessica Andrade is. We've seen her for a very long time. We've seen her compete in title fights against the best in the division, and we know exactly where she stands. We know how good she is pound for pound and in her division, but we don't really know where to place Zhang. Is she number 6? Maybe she's number 2, or maybe she's the uncrowned champion. There's really like a bit of mystery there, but there's no doubt in my mind, and I'm like you, I'm very intrigued by this fight, and there's no doubt in my mind that she is a legitimate threat.
So Rose Namajunas got a lot of love when she decided to defend the title against Jessica Andrade in Brazil back in May. It took a while for her to get that love, but I think by the time the fight happened, she got a lot of love. What Andrade is doing is even more impressive, like going to China to fight a Chinese fighter, as foreign as China can be. And look, we're splitting hairs at this point, but I feel like no one's really talking about this. Like, a champion is going to China to defend a title against a Chinese fighter who lives not that far away. That's a huge deal. That's a huge ask. And Jessica hasn't said a single thing, hasn't complained about it, hasn't even made it into a story. I know she doesn't speak English, so she's not doing a lot of media on this side of the pond. But, like, this is a really big deal. This is a very notable thing that I think should be celebrated.
Certainly should be celebrated. I think part of it comes from the fact that she had a home game in her last fight.
Right.
She was challenging Rose Namajunas on her home turf. We almost recently saw this. I know they were trying to make on the Australia card Volkanovski versus Max Holloway. So I feel like this is becoming more common, more so than less common. It's actually becoming kind of commonplace. I feel like it's something that they're trying to do, but certainly she should be celebrated for the idea of anytime, any place. If we're going to your backyard for the first event in mainland, like I'm game for it.
How big of a deal do you think it would be for the sport if Zhang wins? Like, are we still in that little bubble where, you know, sometimes we make things out to, like, Yao Ming was Yao Ming, right? Like, Yao Ming opened doors. this won't be Yao Ming, right? Or will it? What do you think? What's your sense?
I have a feeling that it would, actually.
Really?
I think that her impact could be that big. The investment that they made in the Performance Institute in China speaks volumes about what they're doing in terms of roster development and trying to find prospects in the Chinese market. Having her as a champion and being able to bring her around to those different locations and tout her as, you know, the first Chinese champion would be huge. And I think she really could actually be a Yao Ming-esque figure if she's able to get it done.
What do you think of Chael's prediction?
Again, it goes back to how I kind of framed it up in the beginning. I don't know how good she is. I know she's good, and I just don't know if she's Jessica Andrade good or I'm a top 10 talent good, because the level of competition that she faced, the only name that really stands out to me is Tisha Torres. That's the only name that I go, okay, this is an absolute top 5, top 10 fighter, and she dismantled her. She looked fantastic. Outside of that, Danielle Taylor, Jessica Aguilar, these are not top talents. These are not somebody that I'm pinning my hopes and dreams to as a title challenger. So it's tough for me to place her. I'm not ready to say that somebody as physically imposing as Jessica Andrade is going to get beaten by Zhang Weili. I think it's a possibility, but I'm not willing to stake that. I would side with the champion in this case.
That's fair. Although I will say, and they're different competitors, no doubt about it, I wasn't overly impressed with Jessica Andrade in her last fight. Like, I thought, and maybe...
Time out.
No?
The Rose fight?
Yeah.
Man.
What?
When you slam knockout somebody, I mean...
Okay, but the first round?
Sure. Like, Rose Namajunas was the champion. She's a great fighter. If we're going to take points away from her for having to overcome some adversity and then get it done, was Stipe's performance less impressive? And are you questioning Stipe after he dropped the first two, maybe three
Just
rounds
saying,
to Cormier?
The entire body of work wasn't like I was saying, wow.
No, she wasn't cruising downhill. But when you can take Rose Namajunas out like that, I'm bowing. I'm ready to.
It was impressive.
I'm ready to bend the knee, as Henry Cejudo would say.
It ended impressively. I'm just saying, like, this idea that she can't lose at 115 is a little crazy.
Well, certainly it wasn't that long ago, although it does seem like a lifetime ago at this point, that Joanna Jędrzejczyk was dismantling everybody at 115, including Jessica Andrade. But for now, I pay my respects to the queen of the division.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so that goes down this Saturday morning. 6 a.m. Eastern, main card on ESPN Plus, prelims 3 a.m. on ESPN. Are you going to, what's your plan? Be honest with me. What's your plan?
I'm going to be here in Bristol, Connecticut.
No way.
Working the fights live.
Live?
Live.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to wake up at 2:30 or are you just going to stay up till 9 a.m.?
No. I'm going to get some sleep and then wake up.
So what time do you think realistically you'll go to sleep?
Maybe try and turn in early, get like a 10 p.m. bedtime.
10 p.m. and realistically, when can you wake up?
Like 2:30.
2:30. Get there for 3.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's gonna be awesome. I'm gonna be in my pajamas. We'll have some s'mores, maybe. Do a little bit of sugar loading, some pixie sticks, and power through.
Are we staying at the DoubleTree, the world famous DoubleTree?
Yeah, we're gonna get some warm cookies and make it an adventure.
Look at you. Wow. Okay. That's impressive.
Where will you be?
I will be home, but I do love the Saturday morning shows. I love them more than anything.
See, but this is morning.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I'm up by 6 a.m., no problem, and I'll watch, you know. Now, 3 a.m. might be a bit of a stretch.
the prelims are out.
Listen, I'm not saying definitively, but might be a bit of a stretch. 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., prime time for me. Oh, my.
I'll give you a wake-up call for the prelims when I'm heading into the office.
Okay. I'll put my phone on Do Not Disturb. But, yeah, I don't mind it. I know some. And if you're on the West Coast, it's great. 12 a.m., no problem. Easy.
Yeah, it's like one of the Ryzen shows where you just power through and stay up all night.
Now, let me ask you about Paige VanZant.
Sure.
Interesting appearance on Monday. The quote that I make more money posting on Instagram than fighting in the UFC was interesting. Confirms that this is the last fight on her deal. A different discussion maybe for a different day, but the Macy Barber stuff I thought was very fascinating. The tension there when she was talking about Macy sliding in her husband's DMs, all that and more. I get the sense, and I want to get your sense, that she is done. That she wants to go to Bellator and fight with her husband. That she wants to fight out the deal and try to make a lot more money and try to make as much as some of these other free agents have been making these days. Did you get that impression as well from everything she said, from her demeanor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily Bellator. I think that would certainly be an attractive option for her, especially because her husband fights there. She's familiar with the promotion, having been now behind the scenes with it as her husband competes. I think that she's going to go where she is valued most. If it's with the UFC, if they're able to, you know, pay her the most money, I think she'll go there. I wouldn't be surprised if another organization, whether it be Bellator, ONE, whoever, you know, says we are in the Paige VanZant business and breaks the bank, I think that's where she's going. Clearly, you know, the statement she made about being home and making more money posting on Instagram is coming from a place of saying, I need to be paid what I'm worth. And she, in no uncertain terms, said that she and other women in the sport need to be paid what they're worth. So it's no shocker to me that she's fighting this contract out and is going to enter free agency. I would guess that she will be more valuable to Bellator than she is to the UFC, but we'll see who's going to provide
more
compensation. Because Bellator needs stars. Bellator needs talent like her much more desperately than the UFC does. I don't know if the UFC sees her as one of those staples. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I think that they have so many other horses in the stable that Bellator doesn't, that they desperately need her.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's sort of like the Nick Newell thing, right? Like Nick Newell will get an opportunity to shine a lot more in Bellator than in the UFC. They'll put him in those positions. I get that. I don't think Paige VanZant is done by any chance. I don't even know if we know how good Paige VanZant will be. Let's not forget she's 25, right? So she's had some bad luck. She's had some injuries. She's fought some tough people who she's lost to. You know, she lost to Rose and whatnot. But I don't feel like she's not worth more. Like I see a lot of people saying like, oh, you should, like Paige VanZant isn't a token good looking girl on the roster. Like I think she's a legit fighter. She has proven her toughness. And I see people, I think it's because you say the Instagram thing. And so right away you're put in that box with all the other people on Instagram who are trying to make money off of just their looks. She is legit. Like I think she is worth, if she can stay healthy, she is worth breaking the bank for, in my opinion. Am I overrating her?
No, I definitely think there's a value to her, but I do think it is tied to fighting. I think that the ability to make that kind of money on Instagram is very directly tied to the fact that she is in the UFC and she is a fighter that people will pay attention to. I don't think that that stays exactly as it is if that fighting ends. I don't think she could just walk away from the sport right now and all of a sudden be set on that Instagram posting and other things that she's doing outside the cage. But I will say that I think there's a difference if a male fighter who's in the top, you know, 15 of their division said the same thing that she said, if they would be viewed the same way. And I don't think that that's the case. I think, yeah, if a male fighter said exactly the same thing, that they could be home posting on Instagram or doing acting or doing whatever other activities that they get paid for outside the cage, I think it would have been viewed differently. I think there is an element of that at play when it comes to Paige VanZant.
I agree. By the way, speaking of Newell, do you think that they will sign him?
Yeah, I mean, certainly with a promotion that visits Connecticut as much as they do, I think it was clear, and I was actually in the arena for that fight, it was a noticeable change in the room when Nick Newell's music hit and he came to the cage.
Wait, you were at that fight? I didn't know that.
I was there. I was doing a little staycation in Connecticut with the family, and I thought I might pop over to the Bridgeport. So
you didn't publicize this, though.
Listen, you know, it's not...
Not everything has
it's
to be
not
publicized
for public consumption.
Wow.
But yeah, he
what a
he,
card to go to. He 14 was, fights, 14 finishes.
Yeah, it was rolling fast and furious, and he was the highlight of the night as far as the local crowd was concerned. That's for sure.
They have to re-sign him. Like they have to sign him to a long-term deal. I think it makes too much sense. And beating a guy like Corey Browning is not like, again, not a, like a cupcake fight. He does have two wins. I know they're not veterans, Kimbo Slice Jr. and Aaron Chalmers, but I think he brings them a lot of attention, a lot of press, and to your point, they fight so many times in the state of Connecticut, it makes all the sense in the world because he is such a big draw. Let me ask you about something because you got to watch it live. This really bothers me. I'm really annoyed about this. Aviv Ghazali pulls off an 11-second submission, phenomenal submission, Imanari roll, leg lock. I mean, just amazing. In my opinion, might be off the top of my head the front runner right now for sub of the year. And this guy, I see on Twitter after I post it, everyone shaming him, insulting him, criticizing him, saying that he was cheap, he's dirty, classless, because his opponent stuck out his hand, fist, to do the old little touch of gloves, and he went in there and went for the sub. Since when do you have to do this? Like, if you want to do it, fine, but really the touch of gloves is more of a strategy, in my opinion, than sportsmanship. You're trying to, you know, gauge the distance, the reach, all that stuff and more. Why is this guy, you know, being asked to do this instead? If your game plan in the back is, hey, let me go out there and attack the leg right away for whatever reason, why should you change your game plan and fist bump with this guy? It makes no sense. It's crazy to me. And look, I know trying to make sense of the internet, the comments, is a futile mission, but in this one, I was kind of shocked at all the hate he got.
Yeah, the gentleman's agreement to touch gloves is between two parties. If you decide not to touch gloves, that is your prerogative, and I have no problem with how that was handled. The opponent clearly seemed like he wanted to touch gloves, and he did not. I have no issue with that at all. If you fake the glove touch, that's where I have a problem. If you fake the glove touch,
yes,
and then you go for the submission, or duck in for, you know, a strike, that's where I have a problem. But not agreeing to touch gloves and then, you know, trying to execute a submission, which you successfully do in 11 seconds, no problem at all.
Yeah. Did you see the comments? I don't know if you read the comments, but everyone was ripping on the guy.
I did see some of the comments on the ESPN MMA Instagram page. Half were essentially pointing out, yes, but he didn't agree to this glove touch. He didn't fake it. He didn't try to do it. And the other half were saying it was cheap and you know, all those things. Regardless, needless to say, he got more attention for that fight than he's gotten in any fight he's ever had in his career, and there will be more attention paid to his next fight due to it. So I think all worked out on that front.
I would go as far as to say, let's outlaw the glove touch. Let's outlaw it. If you want to give props before, you know, when you walk in the cage, all that, but in the middle of the fight, look, or at the top of the fight, or any point of the fight, the hugging, the glove, stop it. Enough. No more.
Yeah, I mean, there is a reason that the referees have you touch gloves when they're giving the instructions at the very beginning, is so that is out of the way and that is done, and then it is time to fight. So I think this is a more recent development. Now, obviously, I'm not talking super recent, because touching gloves during the fight has been in effect for a long time, but it has become commonplace much more recently, and maybe it shouldn't be. I defer to the fighters who are in the cage. If you want to touch gloves, great. If you don't want to touch gloves, great. But as long as you're on the same page, I think everything's kosher.
Right. Don't cry foul if the other guy doesn't touch gloves and submits you and you say, oh, I was just going out there to try to pay respects. No. You're there to fight.
And to his opponent, you know, I'm not sure if he said anything after the fight on that front, but I would hope that he feels that.
Look, imagine if Ben Askren, you know, and Jorge Masvidal were about to fight, and he sticks out his hand, and then all of a sudden, no, it was very clear Jorge Masvidal had a plan, flying knee, he was going to start the fight that way. Forget about the touching gloves. We're here to fight. So that's my two cents. New York Rick, thank you very much. Good to talk to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, my friend. Mark, disappointed.
Yes, me too. All right, let's move along. Thank you very much to New York Rick. Do I have another Cheap Heat plug that I have to say, Troy, or are we good for?
No, we're good for this
week.
That's
good? By the way, why did you retire, though? Are you that banged? I'm just kidding. Come on. Sounds exactly like, no? All right. Let's ask Brett. Let's see what he has to say about it. Let's go now to, I believe, Las Vegas. I always have to throw out that disclaimer beforehand. Brett Okamoto of ESPN standing by. Brett, true or false? Troy, the producer, sounds exactly like Andrew Luck.
Can I get a quick soundbite here?
Troy, tell us about your day. How's it going?
My day has been packed. Did a great baseball podcast earlier today, but now I'm on my favorite sport, MMA.
Come on. You don't hear it?
I don't hear it, no. I mean, Andrew Luck kind of has that, like peanut butter on the top of his mouth kind of sound. I don't hear it out of Troy. Troy sounds like, to be honest, Troy sounds like he could be hosting his own podcast. That's a good radio voice, Troy.
Ooh, I agree. Pitch that to the bosses.
I've actually said that before. We've now had two different explanations on how Andrew Luck sounds, two very different ones from you and Eric. But I maintain he sounds exactly like him, but maybe I'm the only one on this one. Although you did say, Troy, that someone else said it this week. Was it a smart person, or was it someone you don't hold their opinion in high regard?
Someone who I don't think too highly of, okay, said perfect. I look and act, or look. Said I sound and act like Andrew Luck.
Gosh, okay. Well, forget about that. Brett, thank you for joining us. A lot to discuss. Let me ask you about Darren Till. A, Are you in agreement with him moving up to 185? He's moving up to middleweight. You reported on Monday that he's moving up to middleweight finally after everyone seems to have been asking for him to do that. And he's fighting Kelvin Gastelum in his middleweight debut November 2nd, Madison Square Garden, New York City. Do you like the move to 185? And the answers don't have to, you know, they don't have to be related. They don't have to be, it could be exclusive. And do you like the matchup in his middleweight debut?
I like the move up to 185. I wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have had anything really strongly against him staying at 170, just because I feel like, you know, I'm not in the room with those guys. I'm not making those calls. I'm not making those judgments. I mean, I spoke to his coach, Colin Heron, a few weeks back, and he said, you know, look, we're taking a very strategic approach to this at this point. I mean, I really want to see Darren get lean. I want to see what he weighs in between fights. I mean, it's no secret. The guy, as soon as he's done fighting, he disappears and he eats nothing but cheeseburgers and he balloons up. And we want to get a good understanding of when he's at a healthy weight, what is that, and then what weight class should he be in. I mean, I will say this. Colin has never, like, explicitly told me that he wanted Darren to stay at 170, but I always kind of got that feeling. I got that feeling that Colin knew that 185 was going to happen at some point, and then he wanted to just make sure that they were done with welterweight, that it was the best move, because they're probably not going back. But I think, you know, just based on the decision that was made and also just conversations I've had with Darren, I mean, he's been looking forward to not being at 170 anymore. He has been looking forward to not cutting all that weight and being at 185 and feeling a little bit better during fight week. So I think that this was probably his decision, and I think that the decision to fight Kelvin Gastelum was also his. I think he asked for it specifically. I think he wanted a big fight. From what I heard, that there were other options kind of floated out there. There was situations in which he could have headlined a card instead of, you know, fought on a pay-per-view, and he wanted to be in New York. He didn't want to be in a main event. He feels like, I actually kind of heard that he didn't feel like he even deserved to be a main event anymore, that he wanted to earn it. He wanted to go in to middleweight, take on a very, very tough guy, and be a force at this division and prove something right off the bat and prove that he belongs here, that he's going to be a contender here. So this was all kind of Darren putting this together. So you got to love his ambition.
I do love his ambition, and certainly it's what we've come to expect from him. Like, he wants the big fights, he wants the big opportunities. But if you were advising him, do you think it's smart to go in there in your debut? Like, I will say 100%, I think moving up to 185 was very smart, extremely smart. Like, he was killing himself making 170. He looked very unhealthy. He was depleting himself. So I like the move. But the idea of going in there against a guy who just fought for the interim title, went toe-to-toe with Adesanya, in my opinion, right now it's the fight of the year, and was supposed to fight Robert Whittaker. I mean, the number one contender at 185, is that smart for him? Like, if you were advising him, and trying to plan out, all right, how do we get back to where we were at 170? How do we build you back up? It's been a while. It's been since May of last year since we had a victory. How do we get – is going through the supremely tough Kelvin Gastelum the best way to go in the debut?
I mean, I would definitely ask the question of him, right? I mean, I don't think if I was advising him that I would flat out say, man, you're crazy. What? Take an easier fight. You know, I don't want you in that fight. I mean, I don't think that would be my reaction to – you know, a fighter. And in Darren's case, you know, I mean, everybody knows that he was undefeated, then he's lost two in a row. He's in a much different spot now than he was, you know, a year ago. But let's also not start calling for the guy to retire or anything. I mean, he's still a very top guy, obviously. So, I mean, I don't think that you need to take a massive, massive step back. And quite frankly, I just don't think you can. I mean, I've had conversations about that with Darren and his team, and you almost can't take a step back sometimes. I mean, it's hard. If you're able to do it, it's still very, very difficult to do. You know, I mean, once you've reached a certain point, which Darren did, I mean, Darren was not just, you know, a guy who had gotten into the top 10. I mean, everybody was calling him the future star of the sport, you know, that he had something that, you know, not many guys have. When you've reached that level and you've reached that type of hype and that amount of buzz, it is just really hard to backtrack that. So, I mean, yeah, of course, if I was advising him, I would bring up, hey, you know, are you sure? Are you sure that this is the fight you want? You know, I love that you want this, and it says something, and it tells me that your confidence is still there after two difficult fights against Tyron Woodley and Jorge Masvidal. So I love the fact that your confidence is still there, but, you know, moving up. You're not familiar with this weight class yet. This is a guy who's just coming off of a title fight. I mean, he's sort of at the peak of his game. He's figured it out. You know, are we sure we want this? I would have definitely kind of pressed him on that. But hey, if this is the fight that Darren wants, like, there's also a lot of reward here. You know, if he goes out there and he knocks out Kelvin Gastelum in New York, in his debut at 185, I mean, you see this all the time. Like, all of a sudden, all of that momentum is back. You forget about the two losses completely in a way that I don't think you would had he gone out and fought some guy who wasn't ranked in middleweight.
And so, speaking of that card in New York City, I feel like it's really interesting the way the last two pay-per-views are going to play out, because there's a November 2nd pay-per-view. There's a December 14th pay-per-view. The only title fight that has been officially announced for it is Jermaine Durandamy versus Amanda Nunes. Dana White told the reporters yesterday at Contender Series that Colby versus Usman is the fight that they're targeting for that card, but it doesn't seem like it's done just yet. There's Masvidal and Nate out there. John Jones wants to get in another fight. Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovski. How do you think this is all going to shake out? Because it seems like there's a lot of title fights that need to happen. Plus, there's Masvidal and Nate, which I think should be a main event. And, you know, Nate sometimes doesn't want to be on the same card as other people. Connor seems like a bit of a long shot to fight, you know, by the end of the year. But he has already said that he wants to try and fight by the end of the year. How would you lay it out? And how do you think it's going to lay out for those two pay-per-views? Because sometimes it seems like the cupboard is super bare. In this particular case, for the last two pay-per-views, it seems like they have almost too many options.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I mean, how would I lay it out? I mean, I could sit here and be a fight fan and say, like, man, give me all of it. Give me, you know, I want everything.
Sure, sure.
You know, give me John Jones in New York. One thing that you didn't mention is, you know, Khabib has a very tough test ahead of him in Dustin Poirier, but he said that if he wins, he wants to fight again before the end of the year. Tony Ferguson is ready to go, you know, and he's going to be watching that fight next weekend in Abu Dhabi very closely. So you're right. There's a ton of options for the end of the year. Like you, I don't see Conor coming back. So let's take him out of the equation. Nate, you know, you mentioned that you think he's a headliner. I also think that Nate sees himself as a headliner. And we know, you know, earlier this year that the UFC didn't love the idea of putting a non-title fight as a main event, you know, which is a whole other debate in and of itself. But we saw that happen, you know, with Conor McGregor's comments and Cowboy's comments about, you know, they tried to make that fight a co-main between Cowboy and Conor. And they both thought, hey, this is a main event fight. So I tend to think that it's most likely we'll see Nate next year. I mean, I'm certainly leaving the door open for him to appear at the end of the year, but as of right now today, I think it's more likely we see him next year. So, yeah, I mean, I think that Colby and Usman is a great fight in New York. I hope that it comes together. I believe that it will. I tend to be pretty optimistic on that fight coming together from New York. And then you sort of got to see. You got to see what happens with John Jones. You got to see what happens with Daniel Cormier. Is Daniel Cormier coming back this year? I mean, that's a question I would ask you. I know you have a close relationship with him. That's going to have an impact on Stipe. I think that's going to have an impact on John. But hey, it's a good problem to have, because usually, but there are often times where they're kind of looking for fights, and here they've got a ton at their disposal.
I don't think Cormier comes back this year. In fact, I would be shocked if he comes back this year. I know he hasn't decided about his future. I feel like he can't go out like that. I feel like he will try to come back, whether it's against Stipe or someone else, just to get a victory and, you know, right the wrong, so to speak. Feels like Stipe would make the most amount of sense because it's a big fight. Don't tell that to Francis Ngannou, who certainly deserves it as well. So I think that might be a long shot. But yeah, I'm really curious, because the Nate thing, I don't think he's going to take a co-headline spot against anyone. So then, does it mean that we'll only get Nate? I don't think there's a pay-per-view in January, and then the next Las Vegas pay-per-view is in March. Does it mean we'll have to wait for Nate Masvidal, and then what happens then? So it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. Let me ask you about Conor, now that he does want to come back, and it seems like, okay, Khabib, Poirier, Tony Ferguson, Gaethje, Cerrone, I don't know, Max Holloway, like, there's so many options out there, and he isn't really committing to one particular name, even though it does seem like he wants to get the belt back as soon as possible. If you were booking his return, who would you book him against?
If I was booking his return, in what capacity? If I was the UFC, if I was him, if I was on the scene, because I think that they're probably different answers.
If you, that's a tough one. Fair. If you were Team McGregor.
If I'm Team McGregor, I mean, I think I want to look. I don't look at Conor as necessarily being a guy who's ready to come back tomorrow. You know, I think to try to answer who he comes back against, you first have to answer the question of when is he coming back? You know, because things change. You know, circumstances change. To pull a quote from GSP, stocks rise and fall. You know, and so it definitely matters when he comes back. I mean, if he's coming back later this year, that's a different answer than if he's coming back, you know, in the first quarter or the first half of next year. But if I'm sitting here today, I mean, I'd be looking closely at that fight between Cowboy Cerrone and Justin Gaethje still. I liked that fight against Cowboy. I think there's a lot of value in Conor being able to say that I'm fighting a fan favorite at Cowboy, a guy with the most wins in UFC history. I also think that you can play up this idea that Justin Gaethje is the most entertaining fighter in the sport. You know, that's something that's an argument that can be made. That's a simple thing that people can get their heads around if they're unaware of Justin Gaethje. If it's newer fans, you know, and they're watching ESPN saying, oh, Conor's coming back. This guy, Justin Gaethje, who is he? Well, they call him the most entertaining fighter in the sport. And I look at those two matchups, and nothing against either Cowboy or Justin, but if I'm McGregor, I'm probably thinking I can win those fights. I'm thinking that these fights match up stylistically well for me. Not that he would be this massive favorite against them, but we know what Conor's MO is. I mean, he considers himself a tactical, precise striker. Cowboy and Justin, one of the reasons they're fan favorites is because they tend to get hit sometimes, and they're willing to engage in the type of fight that Conor does well in. So if I was his team, I'd be looking at that. I mean, Nate, we're always looking at Nate. You know exactly what you're getting into with Nate. You know that the buzz will be there. You know that the fan interest will be there. Obviously, that means the money is going to be there. You know what you're getting into in terms of what you have in the octagon. There are no surprises, really, with Nate because you've been in there with him twice. So there's always a good amount of options for Conor. But, yeah, if I was him, I wouldn't be surprised if he would be looking at, you know, a Cowboy or a Gaethje, if you know, they come out and they make a good performance. But, you know, when is he going to fight? Is he even going to fight within a time frame that would set up for one of those guys?
Okay, if you're the UFC, what do you do?
Man, if I'm the UFC, I think I do Nate. I do. I think I do Nate, or, and this is going to, people are going to go nuts on this, but I see people all the time, you know, on Twitter saying, why are you even talking about Conor and Khabib? Like, why even mention it? And I just want to shake these people and be like, listen, I have gone on record about a billion times saying I don't think Conor deserves a title shot. I mean, who does? Who honestly thinks that he, quote unquote, deserves it? But if you think that it's not a possibility that the UFC would put him right back in there with Khabib Nurmagomedov because of the money that it would make, you're crazy. That is an absolute possibility. And I can't sit here and tell you without lying that if I was running the UFC that I wouldn't consider it, you know, because they're in the business of making big fights, and that is still a big fight. Him versus Khabib is a huge fight. Him versus Nate is a huge fight. And let's be honest, how confident are we how many more times Conor is going to fight? I mean, what is that number? What is the number of fights left that Conor McGregor has in his career? And how long are they spread out for? Will he come back and then disappear again for 2 years? So if I'm the UFC, I'm kind of tempted to take full advantage of it and maybe not get too cute and set up the biggest fight that I can while I know that I have an interested Conor McGregor to get in the octagon.
Yeah, that is, I mean, you're right when you break it down that way. They are both coming at this from different perspectives. I think at the end of the day, the UFC probably wants him to stick around as long as possible. I'm not breaking any news here. I'm certain that they want him to be successful because they can make more money when he is around. But you're right. Like, if I'm Team McGregor, I would push for the winner of Cerrone Gaethje because I think that that's a more, you know, style friendly fight, so to speak. It's a more winnable fight than going in there against Khabib right off the bat. To me, sounds crazy. But if you're the UFC, you know you're going to make, you know, over $2 million for that pay per view. How do you, you know, how do you turn your back on that? You know, so I get it. It's going to be fascinating to see how they actually book him whenever he's ready. I think it's going to be really interesting, and we'll get, I wouldn't be surprised if they present him with Khabib, even though we both agree that it's probably not smart. I wouldn't be surprised if he just takes it.
Oh, he would take it immediately. What's interesting is that Khabib told me that he won't. he'll flat out say, no, I'm not fighting that guy. I don't want to fight him. I'm fighting right now for legacy and beating him again after I just dominated him at UFC 229. Doesn't do anything for my legacy. So there's another interesting twist. Now, is that ironclad? I mean, does that mean that he would absolutely do that? I mean, who knows, you know? But I can tell you that I was with him a couple weeks ago in San Jose, and he told me that no, I'm not fighting Conor. And he said, Dana, don't even call me with this fight. Don't even call me with it. So another interesting wrinkle in all of it.
Yeah. It seems like everyone, like Khabib, if he wins, Ferguson, I think, has to happen. And Poirier, if he wins, could open up for Conor because there's the rematch component there. He beat him at 178.
It would open for Conor.
Yes.
If so Dustin goes out and beats Khabib, I think we're seeing that fight.
But I will say that Khabib certainly warrants an immediate rematch if he loses, especially in a freak, you know, accident. He's undefeated, 27-0, so it would be hard to deny him that. I really want to see the Holloway fight. Like, in speaking to Conor, it seems like there's a lot of animosity there from the trip to Dublin and all that. But I think Holloway needs to defend the title against Volkanovski. And so if you look at all those, and I think Nate versus Masvidal needs to happen because there's so much positive press surrounding that fight. So you look at all that, I sort of feel like the one that makes the most sense for all involved right now is Gaethje Cerrone winner. There's a history there with both guys. They were supposed to fight him, you know, at separate points this year. I kind of like that. I like it, and I think that, you know, everyone would like. I don't see how Conor wouldn't like that fight other than the fact that it's not for a belt, but I think he stands to make just as much money with or without the title on the line these days. So it's going to be interesting to see.
When does it happen, though? Because like you just said, that the next UFC pay-per-view in Vegas would be March. Cowboy's not going to sit around and wait until March, and I just don't see Conor coming back this year. So I'm with you. I mean, I think that that's the most me personally, that's what I want to see the most. I want to see Conor fight the winner of that fight, but that fight is in, you know what, 2-3 weeks, and then March is a long time away. So, yeah, it just a lot of it does come down to timing and exactly when Conor is going to fight and which pay-per-view they can put him on.
For now, though, it's the UFC in China this Saturday. Zhang Weili against Jusgun Drudge for the strawweight title. Appreciate the time, Brett. Thank you very much for doing this.
Anytime, bud. See ya.
All right, so the UFC back this Saturday in Shenzhen, China. Again, 6 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus, 3 a.m. Eastern on ESPN. That's the prelims title fight. Some other interesting names. Zhang Liang, the Leech, Li Zhang Liang, going up against Eliseu dos Santos. That's an interesting fight at 170 pounds. So there have been some great moments in the UFC's 5 previous trips to China. I counted them down on the show earlier this week. The spinning back elbow from Dong Young Kim against John Hathaway, Kung Lee knocking out Rich Franklin and retiring him, Michael Bisping knocking out Kung Lee, Francis Ngannou against Curtis Blaydes. There have been some big moments. Will Zhang Weili top them all this Saturday? That remains to be seen. We shall find out in a couple days. For now, though, we are out of time. Thank you very much to all our guests. Thanks to all of you who continue to rate, download, subscribe, all those things and more. I appreciate it more than you know. If you can throw in a comment there too, wow, I would love you. And Troy will personally come to your house and throw the old football around with you too, just like Andrew Luck. Not only does he sound and look and act like him, he throws the ball like him too. It's amazing. Anyway, thank you very much to Brett Okamoto. Thank you very much to New York Rick. Thank you very much to Alex Corbisero. Not thank you to Mark Ramundi, but happy birthday to you. We appreciate it. We might let it slide. I'm not sure yet. Or you'll get a lifetime ban. It's one or the other. Let it slide, lifetime ban. We'll find out. We're out. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We love you. We'll see you next week. Appreciate it. Enjoy the fights.